Good morning, this is Frankly speaking. Today we're going to talk about winterizing your home and other ways to beat winter energy costs. I'm Helen Ackerman from George Mason University. December marks the official beginning of winter, and winter is almost upon us. With continually rising fuel costs, the price we pay for keeping warm is increasing alarmingly every year. As oil prices are unlikely to go down, more and more consumers are looking at ways to cut heating bills through properly insulating their homes, the frugal use of electricity, and using alternative forms of heating such as wood stoves. With us today to share some expert advice on how to save energy costs is Jim Buck, Director of Media Community Relations with VEPCO. Jim, what's the single most effective way to save energy in the home?
Probably the single most effective thing that most people could do in their homes is to cut down air infiltration. The biggest major culprit of robbing the heat from your house and also increasing your energy bill is hot air getting outside the house during the cold months and hot air getting inside the house during the warm months, let's say. So really the best thing that anybody can do, the most cost-effective thing, is really go around their house and inspect all the areas where air might get in, the doors, underneath doors, baseboards, around windows, where the house meets the foundation, the sill plate, in other words. That's a way that air can get in. Cracks in your foundation, improperly vented attics, all of those types of things. Well, you'd be amazed at the amount of cold air that will come into a house during the wintertime through the baseboards and also through the wall sockets and switch plates in your house.
How would you stop air coming through the baseboards?
Well, there's a way to do it. You can get two products that you can pick up in supply houses mm-hmm. in the area, and they're not very expensive, really. One is a baseboard sealer. It's kind of a gel caulk, so to speak. In doing that, though, you have to either remove a portion of the baseboard and kind of caulk underneath it, let's say, or remove the entire baseboard altogether. It depends on the age of the house and what kind of baseboards they have there. The other thing you can do, you can get a tape. It's sort of like Christmas tape, let's say. And you can seal the baseboards in that way. Mm-hmm. And both are real cost-effective. They're very inexpensive, relatively speaking.
That brings to mind a question I had. Is an older house likely to be better sealed than a newer house or vice versa?
No, an older house, as far as air infiltration goes, an older house is probably not as well sealed. There's been more time for the sill plate of the house to pull away from the foundation in places. There's been more time for cracks to develop. The house, of course, has settled with age, so different parts settle at different rates on most homes. So usually an older house is really going to have more air get in or out, depending on which months you happen to be speaking of, than a newer house.
So is what you're trying to do basically to seal off every single crack and hole that's in your house, stop any air getting in at all?
No, you don't want to stop any air from getting in at all. That's the primary reason for having like vents in your foundation and also vents in the attic. You basically want the air in the house to change about once an hour. You don't want it to change any more than that. In a lot of older houses, it's a lot more than that, let's say 10 to 15 times an hour. Even new homes that were built last year, let's say, unless the place has been really tightly insulated and they've done caulking and weather stripping, all of those things, the air will change more than once an hour in that house, too.
Is it even possible to seal off your house that completely? I have read about some cases where people have managed to do that, yeah, and it's been detrimental to their health.
You can seal a house so tightly, let's say, that really you keep the pollution inside is what happens. And also, you know, the materials that houses are made from, there's a certain amount of things in there that you don't want to be breathing necessarily all the time either. You know, but with normal air changes, it cleanses the air in the house, so to speak. You can seal it too tightly, but it's kind of hard to do that. So really, for most people, you want to go out and try and seal as tightly as possible.
Insulation is something that everybody is talking about at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. Is it desirable to insulate every single part of your house, or is it one area more effective than another?
Well, you know, that kind of depends on the age of the house and what sort of insulation is in there to begin with. Usually, if you're going to add insulation to the house, you want to be thinking about doing it in the attic, let's say, especially at this time of year because warm air rises. So theoretically, that warm air is going out through your attic and out through the roof. Also during the summertime, and it's a good idea to think about attic insulation for that, during the summertime you've got a very large mass of very, very hot air up in your attic that sits above you all the time. And if you have, the better the insulation is between you and that mass of hot air, the better off you are in your home, the more comfortable you are. But that's probably the first thing to look at. The other insulation area that people can look at, of course, is insulating the floor or insulating the foundation if it's, say, an unheated crawl space beneath your house, those types of things. Usually wall insulation, if you're going to do any insulating at all, is the last thing you want to look at. It's going to be costly to get the stuff in there. You've either got to blow it in, you know, by drilling holes in your house, or you've got to take off one wall someplace, either inside or outside the house, to get the insulation in there. That's expensive. So really the payback period, you know, the time to recover the amount of money you'd spend on that is not really worth it in a lot of cases. Unless, like on a very old house, I'll give you an example. My parents live up in Buffalo, which is very cold. They live in a house that's about 120 years old, something along that line. There's no insulation in the place at all. Now, they've insulated the attic and they've insulated the floor, but as far as wall insulation goes, there will be a point in time where they'll have to replace the siding. And it's maybe at that time that my father would think about putting wall insulation in, but otherwise, it's just not going to be cost-effective for him.
In the case of the attic in particular and the crawl space, is it a case of if some insulation is good, more is better?
In some cases, that's true. Now, in the attic particularly, if it's an older house and it maybe only has about a couple or 3 inches of that old blown-in rock wool type of insulation, that really isn't the best insulation in the world, number one. And number two, there's very little vapor barrier on that. You want to have a little bit of a vapor barrier on your insulation. In that type of case, where they've got a very low level, it would be cost-effective probably to put in another 3.5 or maybe 6 inches of roll-type insulation in your attic, if you can get to the attic real easily. In some cases, though, let's say the person has about the recommended level that we used to have, which was an R19 insulating value in the ceiling. We now recommend about an R30. It wouldn't be good to go from, say, R19, if you've got that, to R30. It's going to take you too long to recover the money that it would cost you to put that additional insulation in there. You might want to spend that money on some other things on the house.
Can you translate R19 into inches of insulation?
R19 is about a 6-inch bat of insulation. R30 is about 9 to 12. Somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. If you have the old style insulation, do you need to dig that out, so to speak? I have that in my house, which is why I'm curious. Can you lay the bat type insulation over the top, or do you need to go down and excavate it?
You probably need to go down and dig the stuff out, because like I say, there very probably is no vapor barrier underneath that. You need a little bit of a vapor barrier, in other words, to keep the insulation from picking up a lot of moisture itself. If it does that, it tends to clump, it tends to promote rotting, you know, in the timbers of the home. And it really starts to lose its insulating value when it does that. So you'll probably want to take that out and put, say, a vapor barrier, which is merely, say, a piece of plastic or paper that's stapled along the joist, the ceiling joist, and then put that back in and put your roll insulation over the top.
Are storm doors an effective way of keeping heat in? Are they as effective as storm windows?
Storm windows, really, you've got more windows in your home than doors. So storm windows, if you don't have any kind of storm windows or doors, it's a better idea to think about the windows first and then the door second. Basically, a storm door, it takes a good deal of time to actually recover the amount of money you'd spend on it. A storm door these days probably runs from $60 to $100, even if you install it yourself. It's going to take you a long time, more than 7 years, let's say, to recover that amount of money. But the value of the storm door, and even the storm windows to some extent, is you need to think to a certain extent of what value you put on your own comfort. The storm door is going to cut out a certain amount of drafts that come along the floor during the winter time. It's going to make it a little more comfortable on your feet while you're reading at night, let's say, a little more comfortable if you have small children that are crawling around on the floor. And there's a certain value associated with that. There's no dollar value that you can put on that. But really, I suppose that's the biggest value of something like a storm door. A storm window is really going to pay off, or storm windows are really probably going to pay off a little more, because you can put those on the sides of the house that are colder, the north side of the house, the east side of the house, and maybe think about the south and west sides later. You've also, as I say, got more glass area in your windows than you do in your doors.
What's the greatest energy consumer of all household appliances?
Well, the biggest, of course, is how you heat the house. Right up there with that would be how you cool the house. As far as appliances themselves inside the house is the hot water heater. Uh-huh. And then behind that you come to how you refrigerate your food, especially if somebody has a deep freeze. They're fairly expensive to run. And during the winter time, particularly, how you dry your clothes. It's not really, of course, in most areas you can't hang clothes out in Northern Virginia anyway, but during the winter time it's especially hard because it's really hard to put on shirts if they're frozen and stuff. So, you know, clothes drying is going to run up a certain amount of money. And then beyond that, all the other appliances that you have in the house, specialized types of things, your lighting, all of that, they really don't amount to all that much in terms of how much energy they use compared to the five I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the best way then to make the most effective use of your water heater?
Well, the first thing, it kind of runs hand in glove with the first thing that you might do with how you heat your home is turn your thermostat down. Most hot water heaters, when they come from the factory, are set at about 160 degrees. That's what manufacturers have recommended since the beginning of time, so to speak. You really don't need 160 degree hot water in the house.
Not even for a dishwasher?
And if you have, well, for a dishwasher, they recommend that you have that, but it's not altogether necessary unless you want to make sure you sterilize your dishes. 160 degree hot water, if you have small children, there are times, I know my kids have done it, where the child can scald themselves from hot water from the tap. Most people can get by with setting their hot water heater on about 120 or 130 degrees. And the reason it depends in that case is how far the hot water heater is from where your sinks are, because it's going to have to travel through a number of pipes. And normally hot water pipes are not insulated. So but that's the first thing. The second thing you can do is for about $20, sometimes less, sometimes a little bit more, you can get an insulation blanket for the hot water heater itself. Now, it will take less than a year in most cases to recover the money, that $20 or $25 that you saved. It'll cost a family of four about $250 to $300 a year just to heat hot water. Now, there's a lot of times during the day and night that you're not using that, but you're paying for a certain amount of energy to keep that water warm.
Should you ever turn it off? For instance, if you're leaving the house the whole day and you're leaving it empty?
There are people that do that. It's not necessarily a bad idea, especially if it's a newer hot water. For something like an electric hot water heater, that's probably a very good idea. Now, a natural gas heater, or some people still have the old oil hot water heaters. You know, you've got a live flame there that you're working with, and it's not necessarily a great idea to be turning that off on a daily basis. If you leave on vacation for, let's say, a month or something, that's a fine idea to do that. But you can get a timer, I think, for your hot water heater that kind of cycles it off for certain periods of the day, and that's especially helpful for somebody where the husband and wife both work, let's say, and they're out of the house.
Jim, thank you very much for coming and telling us how we can keep warm more cheaply this winter.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University, production coordinator Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Helen Ackerman for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.